Hello, everybody. This is Jeff Lindahl with my sidekick, Jeannie Olowski. This is Let's Grill Jeannie call today. So if you have any questions that you want to ask Jeannie about raising money, investor splits, or anything about deal analysis, she is the one. So pick her brain. So press *0 right now. And to get the most out of this call, you want to be asking questions. So Jeannie, I'll have you take over the call right now.
So first, we want to welcome everybody and welcome all the new students from the Boston Boot Camp, which happened last weekend. Dave was on fire there. He hadn't lost his touch. What's happening in our world? Jeff is headed for Columbus, Ohio for his immersion this weekend. And in Seattle.
He actually already did Columbus. Sorry, Jeannie. He already did Columbus in Seattle.
I should have known that. He already did Seattle, so now he's going
Kansas City. Yeah.
And I love Kansas City. I love that.
Somewhere over the rainbow.
I love the way they light up the whole weekend, the whole downtown area with those little Christmas lights all year round. It's really beautiful. Tammy and the crew are heading to Dallas this weekend, and next weekend they'll be in Oregon. Upcoming events, Perfect Your Pitch, October 4 and 5 in Plymouth, and that is with Dave Lindahl himself. Elevate, October 6th and 7th in Plymouth, right at the 1620, right near Plymouth Rock. It's beautiful down there. The private money events coming up in October, the 20th through the 22nd, will be in Long Beach. And if you want to learn more or find out where these places are, if you're not already registered, give Jermaine or myself a call and we'll help you. Our first high five goes out to Doug and Mario DiTillo from Naples, Florida. We hope they fared well in the last hurricane, too. They recently purchased 160 mobile home lots in St. Petersburg and Lakeland, Florida. Both parks provide immediate cash flow and opportunities to increase value in year. High five goes to Neil Bauer and Jean-Marc Landau. They are doing a $44 million student housing deal, and they were able to raise the down payment in 22 days. I could learn something from them. Okay, operator, do you think we have any questions as of yet?
Yes, our first question comes from Nonay. Nonay, please state your question.
Okay, so hi, Jeannie. I have two questions, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Great. Before we even buy a property, do we need to have an LLC?
No.
In place? No?
No. No. You can buy the property in your name as long as in your contract it says and or assigns. That's the real key, because you don't want to keep it in your name. You want to assign it to the LLC of the property. So
uh-huh.
that, you know, you're protected from any, you know, harm to your own credit or anything like that. So you can buy it in your name, but you've got to put and or assigns and create an LLC the minute you have a property you're going to move forward on.
Uh-huh. So that's in the offer? Or the
purchase and sale? Well, doesn't it's in the offer, but by the time you hit purchase and sale, I hope that you know you're going to move forward with the property.
Uh-huh.
So that you can assign it to the LLC of the property.
Okay, great. My second question is, SEC attorneys, do you have
yes.
someone in this area that you trust that you can recommend?
Well, help me within this area, because I don't know where
yes.
you are.
Well, we're thinking of maybe Fall River, Lowell to invest there.
But here's the thing. SEC attorneys, they can be anywhere in the country because they're licensed
right.
all over the place. So
okay.
we typically would use somebody like Kim Taylor. She's
uh-huh.
in Florida. She's in St. Augustine. She has a really good feel for what's going on with syndications, and she does a lot of our students, and I can give you her number, which
that's
is 858-335-8825. And if you want to send me an email, I have a couple of others I can recommend as well.
Okay.
And my email is jeannie@rementor.com.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome anytime.
Thanks.
Up next, we have Mark. Mark, please state your question.
Hey, Jeannie, it's Mark Dupuis from Ottawa, Ontario. How are you doing?
I knew it was you. How are you?
How you been?
I'm doing good. I'm
doing
out of
good.
Maple syrup, though, buddy.
I would have had some for you in September at that event, but we ended up not going because I had to go to... I had to go to Kentucky to do the inspections on this 40-unit property that we have under contract right now. So I had to...
Good for you.
Yeah, I had to get down there. You remember I had a hard time getting across...
I can buy store-bought. It's okay.
It's not the same. I'll bring you some more.
Thank you.
So... I'm still trying to put this 40 unit to bed. I've got Eric Stewart working on the financing. He says that Wednesday he might have something for me as far as, you know, having the institutional first in place with a sponsor. Of course, Amanda and I are kind of itchy about the whole financing, about, you know, putting the rest of it together. And not so much like, yeah, this deal is important. We want to put this one together and get it done. But it's about future deals and you know, kind of moving forward.
It's your gateway. It's your gateway going forward. We understand.
Yeah. So, we're having a hard time putting the, like, we don't have, I think we structured a pretty good deal with this 40 unit. We ended up, after the inspections were done, they identified about $170,000 worth of things to be done. Now, some of them didn't really need to be done or don't need to be done right now. He says, you know, I'm just putting stuff in there so that the owner kind of recognizes, you know, what needs to be done and, you know, so to help you kind of negotiate price. That's kind of what he's done. And we've managed to include that $170,000 in our purchase price. So we only have to come up with 20%. Yeah, so we only have to come up with 20% of the purchase price plus all the renovations, which is pretty good. I think it's going to be a really good deal because even the property package that I put out is pretty, like, the numbers are really good on it, but like I padded it really, really, you know, I probably padded it too much. Actually, my coach Don said you probably shouldn't do that. I padded it as much like that, but I wanted to make sure that it was really conservative and so people. And I could really meet those numbers. So, like I say, for me, I'm really thinking, like, and I'm saying, I'm having a little bit of a hard time raising. I think we've got a guy here in Ontario that's going to put up 2/3 of the equity that we need.
Great.
So I still need a little bit left, but I'm a little leery about, you know, sort of pushing forward on new deals and bigger deals, just because if I'm having a hard time raising, like, this is only. Like, we only need $350,000 for this one.
Total?
Total.
From beginning to end?
For the equity piece, yeah, is all we need. So
and you're having trouble. Haven't
I
taught
you
anything? Haven't I taught you anything? Come on.
I guess I'm not listening. I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Well, I don't think you're doing anything wrong. I think you're too emotionally attached to this property, and you should have Amanda maybe raise the money because she'll give a different perspective or get somebody else to do it for you, because when you're doing it and you're going to benefit from it, it's like a hiccup. I mean, it's like any time you do something and you know there's a big reward at the end, you kind of feel guilty taking somebody else's money. But what you're doing is offering them an opportunity to make more money than they're currently making. And you've got to drill that into your head so that you can go forward and raise money like you should be raising money.
Yeah, and I get that, but like I've kind of exhausted the people that I know that I've shared this with.
So why don't you call me offline? Because I am not going to help you online.
Okay.
How's that? Okay.
All right. I'll call you after the call.
Okay.
Thanks, Jeannie.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Nonae had another question. Nonae, please state your question.
Hi, Jeannie. It's me again.
Hi.
So what type of insurance is needed for to protect us in the process? Do we need insurance? Is it a special kind of insurance? Or?
Well, you need property insurance, of course.
Right. So once we buy it, we need a property insurance. But it's not any different from regular property insurance because it's bigger, it has more units.
Yeah, it's a different skill set. I could give you the name of the insurance company that we recommend. It's Franklin Insurance.
Uh huh.
And the guy's name is Michael Shadeed, Shadeed. And his office line is 404-832-1254. And you can give him a call and talk to him about it.
Okay, that'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And one more question.
Okay, no problem. You ask away.
Yeah, thank you. Resources, David Lundahl was talking about checking out economic growth info for the town. Where can I find that?
Well, you could go on to a lot of different sites, but the first place you should go is to your local Chamber of Commerce or Economic Development Committee, because they're going to tell you what's going on to drive more business into the area, as well as what they're doing to revitalize downtown areas.
Uh-huh.
You can also go to Nielsen, N-I-E-L-S-E-N, and they do demographic reports. You can also go to any Marcus and Millichap or C.B. Richard Ellis, anybody like that can show you what's going on in the community. I mean, as far as New England is concerned, I recommend umf.com, unitedmultifamily.com, and they have many resources up there on their site, which shows what's going on in New England as far as job growth goes.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much. UMF.com.
You're welcome. Yep.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Jeannie.
You're
welcome. Looking forward to meeting you in person.
Thank you.
Okay.
Up next, we have Mike. Mike, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. It's Mike Urquhart from Great Falls,
Mike.
Virginia.
How are you?
I just got a lead on a 116-unit senior living apartments.
Mm-hmm.
And the numbers look really good, but I'm wondering if there's anything special I should look out for when I'm dealing with senior housing.
Well, if it's a community that has pharmaceuticals involved, you should really watch that, because you might have to have a doctor and a nurse on staff. You know, anything like that. I know in most of the senior centers that I've seen, not like a life care or nursing facility. These are like people just over 55 that want an easier way of life, so they're living in these condexes, if you will. Those are great. They really produce good cash flow, and of course you don't have any riffraff or tenant problems. But if it has pharmaceutical or anything to do with, you know, doctors and nurses, that's something to watch for. Jeff, you got anything to add on that?
I don't do any of that. I just strictly focus on apartment buildings.
Yeah.
As far as I know, they don't. They have an adult daycare center on site.
That's good.
That rents space in the clubhouse, and it rents for $30,000 a year.
Mm.
So, but I don't. It's not assisted living. It's just senior living.
Yeah, I don't see a problem with that. Is it all government subsidized?
I don't know. There are, out of the 116, there's about 10 or 15 that are Section 8.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. But I mean, they don't mention any other government subsidies. But
no,
I think it can be
a fruitful thing to go after. You know, and you might be able to institute a lot of programs there that will produce more income as well.
Yeah, I'm looking at that. I mean, they have a number of things already. I mean, they have a beautician barber that, you know, comes there to the clubhouse.
Yep.
And they do a lot of classes and Bible study classes and stuff, you know. And so,
yep.
It looks like it's a well-run place. Their financials leave a bit to be desired, but I'm still working with those.
Yep.
But I just didn't know if there was anything special. I mean, is there any special insurance requirements for, you know, above and beyond normal insurance for senior living?
I really don't know. I mean, that's a question. I already gave you Michael Shadid's phone number. I would check with him.
Yeah,
I don't do anything with insurance.
Okay, yeah, I've got his phone number, so I'll give him a call.
Yep.
All right, thank you.
All righty, good talking to you.
Thank you.
Next on the line, we have Paul. Paul, please state your question.
Hi, Jeannie and Jeff. It's Paul.
Hi,
Paul.
How are you?
Doing pretty well.
Good.
I had a question about the underwriting template, and if you have a property that's a rehab play where, say, 15 units are not being rented because of water damage. If you run the numbers on the underwriting template, you have the seller's figures versus your figures. And if the occupancy calculates out to 20% because of these offline units, if you're going to rehab them and bring them back online, would you, you know, include a better occupancy figure in your columns, which would, you know, produce a higher sales price that you're going to offer him, but the, you know, that keeps you in the game potentially in terms of getting the property, because the, because they're kind of basing their price and their expectations that, you know, you bring these units online after you rehab them and you get more income. So
that is your value play, not their value play. That's your value play, so that you can show your investors what you're going to do with the property once you take over, not the value play of the owners to give them a higher price. I wouldn't. I'd do two sets of underwriting, one with what it is right this minute, the way you're going to buy it, and one with what you're going to sell to your investors.
Okay, and that's kind of what I was thinking that yours column was, but you basically keep two different templates.
No, your column, when you're first underwriting a deal, is what you actually are seeing on your rent rolls, on your trailing 12s, because a lot of times the seller's columns are really fudged. So your column is the actual numbers of what it is right now. A lot of people don't put in any vacancy, and you know that there's 10 units vacant. So your column should be the actual numbers you get from the trailing 12s as well as the, you know, the rentals. And then the what you're going to make it is when you bring those 15 units online. It might take you a year to complete it, but if your investors trust you, you're buying it at this price, but this is what you're going to make it, and it might take a year before they get really good cash flow, but it could be a real good pop for you once you get those units on.
Okay, yeah, and the distinction of just creating a separate investor sort of spreadsheet for
underwriting. Yep.
For one. So, and then the other question related to that is if you have a large amount of rehab costs, on the underwriting template, the figures are kind of like annual figures. So would you include like the rehab costs and like closing costs other just as a way of getting them to filter equation?
Yep. Yep. And then what you want to do is you want to show the investors, these are the rehab things that we would like to accomplish this year. And this is even before you finish with the bank and what the bank's going to require. These are the things that you know you want to do and how much it's going to cost so that you can show them why you're raising so much more money than the down payment.
Right. Okay. Okay. All right. Thanks. That answers my question.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple questions on that deal. What's the current occupancy on it?
The current occupancy is, 17% vacancy.
70? So all right. So you'd have to do a bridge. So what I would do is, like, there's two ways of doing it. Since you're at 77, so it's definitely a bridge loan. So you'll have to get the terms from Eric, and you have to see what type of season he wants on that. If it's like 6 months of being at 85% occupied or not. If it was over 85 or at 85, you could find out what he has for interest only for the first 2 years. And then you do what Jeannie was saying, when you go to conventional, then you run the numbers there. But you need to tell your investors that we're doing this at interest only, when any of the rent that comes in is going into rehabbing those 20 units, because you need those. It seems, is the occupancy low? Does the 20, how much of a factor is that? How many units is it?
It's about 86 units.
86?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so that 20 down units is not going to below stability. I was saying, you know, if it was like over 100, 150 units at 20 units don't have as big of an effect on your occupancy, but that's like that is definitely a bridge to conventional. So I'd have that discussion with Eric, because you need to know those terms right away to put it into those underwriting template.
I know a bridge loan company, and Eric knows them too. It's Forman Capital, Forman Capital. They do a really good job. They're in Florida, and I can give you their number. It's 561-588-0132.
Yeah, you can check them out, too. And when you check with Eric, right, Fannie Mae does have a bridge to permanent financing program that you just have to see what the closing costs would be doing it with Fannie the whole way through. Or going outside to an outside resource that Jeannie gave you, and then doing a conventional. It might be, and then decide which choice is going to be easier for you and less expensive.
Okay. All right, great. And the bridge loans, they typically, like, what's the overview on, I mean, do they still charge you pretty much the same closing costs? They just don't have a prepayment penalty, and you just have this.
I think you got to call them and get specifics from them.
Yeah, okay.
It depends on who you're using.
Yeah. Okay, all right, thanks for the info.
Okay, Paul.
Up next, we have Alan. Alan, please state your question.
Hi, just a quick question on strategy. So if the apartment building has 25 units, but all of them are single bedroom units, is it worthwhile to move forward with that, or we really need to move with the mix of the, you know, two bedroom and one bedroom?
Well, that's what we like, but if the area is conducive to singles, you know, a lot of these upscale San Francisco marketplace areas, they're mm-hmm. conducive to singles. And, you know, so if the area commands it and you see the property is pretty much full except for maybe one or two vacants, then there's a need. And then you want to look and see how long the tenants stay there. The reason
okay.
why we like for every one bedroom you want two bedrooms is because most of the time people end up getting married and they have children, and then you don't want to lose them as a tenant. But if it's mm-hmm. a workforce environment like a hospital or a university or even like Microsoft or one of them, it could command that it's singles are the norm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Another thing I want to add to that, too, is you need to look at the last 3 years' occupancy on that, and then you're going to have to underwrite at a higher tenant turnover if they're not getting that occupancy. That's what happens. That's why we like that ratio 2-to-1, one of the main factors. Also, your unit sizes should be at least 700 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're comparing other properties that have the demand with the tenants that are going into that one bedroom, check out their floor plans. Make sure you have the property you're looking at has floor plans that are similar, because, like I said, 700 square feet is the key to make sure you have mm-hmm. good oversized one-bedroom units.
I see. And what is the ratio that you take on? What percentage of occupancy ratio should we take? I know that we need to do the analysis and all that, but if you want to factor a risk factor for the occupancy and all that, is there a rule of thumb that we should just take, you know, 15% or something like that for vacancy?
Well, you want to work on actuals first off, and if
okay.
the actuals are showing less than 85% occupancy, then you're not going to be able to get a regular Fannie Mae
right.
Freddie Mac loan. So you gotta watch that to be careful, you know, cause if you're using investors, that's risky.
Yeah. All right.
Well, you need to know
Thank
what the market occupancy is, right? You look at the market occupancy, and then if you're looking for a niche, right? So say the
mm-hmm.
the market occupancy is at 93.3%. You want that occupancy for these one bedrooms to be like 95 or so, or higher, okay? Because
mm-hmm.
you're going in with like the niche product in this market. So but the comps in that area are going to be based on some of the two bedrooms and things like that. So you want to be above what the market is when you look at the financials on the property.
Great. Good suggestion. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Up next, we have Alicia. Alicia, please state your question.
Hi, Jamie. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Alicia. Congratulations. You found something.
I did. I finally did.
That's great.
I have several in the works, actually. Some were in Miami, and then the hurricane hit, so we kind of put a stop on that for a little bit to see what was going on. But this one in Phoenix that I spoke to you about, what I kind of emailed you about, I was curious on your opinion of it. So a little bit of background is that it's only 22 units. They're smaller, which is kind of okay. I mean, I'm enjoying the smaller ones because I can really whip through the underwriting, and I do the five-year analysis on it, and, I mean, it goes really quickly for me. But my curiosity is that they have all been remodeled. The entire building has been remodeled. And so they're now just starting to rent them out. The owner provided a leasing agent who has leased these out. Well, I went to visit last week, and she leased out five units within 5.5 days. So that tells me that
you
the
wonder
demand is
why.
There.
Well, I wonder why she leased them out when
concessions.
Yeah, I mean, did she give them a $99 move-in special or what? Or is rent too cheap? You know?
The rent's too cheap. The rent is definitely too cheap according to my my calculations over there, according to my comps and things like that.
And do they have month-to-month? Are they month-to-month or are they on year-long leases?
No, one of them is a six-month, the rest of them are a year lease. Which is
so now you're stuck with $150 loss every month from each tenant.
But it's $750. The rents in that area are going for $775 and up. So yes, I'm stuck with $750 for a year.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is that it's giving me a gross rent to fall back on to be able to say this is my starting point, and therefore I am offering her a much lower amount for these
mm-hmm.
properties. She wants 1.9, I'm offering 1.6, and it looks like she's going to bite. We're kind of talking about it right now. But my curiosity, though, is that for an investor, clearly they're not going to be able to receive any sort of income for at least a year. And how do you present that? It's a thriving area. It's right down, it's about a mile and a half down from downtown, and that whole area is just starting to really build up. In 2 years' time, 3 years' time, you're going to see a huge change in through there. Which is why I wanted to go visit. So do you have
any...
What's
going to be your exit strategy?
Well, the exit strategy is at the end of 5 years, I am going to have a cap rate. I'm going to have cash-on-cash return 15.4, and I'm going to have a cap rate of 10.34, which, of course, I'm not going to give somebody 10.34 in a cap rate, but I can sell that area for a double for what I've got it. I calculated a 2.25 at least, just selling price.
So you just told me that you're offering 1.6, but in this thing you say your down payment is 825 and your raise is 1.3?
Well, the raise, what I'm looking for the raise is to cover 3 months of operating, which total expenses right now are $44,000, a little bit more than $44,000. The raise is to cover the 3 months of operation, and there's a couple little things that I want to add value, and that is there's a place in the back that is vacant, and I could put storage there and charge more. The laundry is for free right now. I can put paid units in there. Paid washer and dryers. There is parking in back that I want to put a cover over and charge more for covered parking. That's only going to cost me $8,000 to do that. It's going to cost me roughly $6,000 to $8,000 to put in the storage units. And then the rubs, I'm not really familiar. I think I get the suggested price is $85 per person. And then there is one more thing, and what was that? So total, I'm calculating an addition of almost $10,000 more per year, per month on that. Per year, $10,000 more in income. And these are they're small units. I mean they're all studios. But
they're all studios?
They're all studios. The anchor is that there is two medical facilities less than a mile away that a lot of the and then there's a university not too far as well. So that's the play. Any thoughts?
Oh, how many thoughts I have.
You've got to put silence over there.
Hello. Yeah, I have many thoughts.
Okay.
You obviously did a lot of homework on this, which I commend you for.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably rather give you a call and talk about this on
okay.
the phone rather than, you know, hash this over on this coaching call, if you don't mind.
Okay. No, not at all. I would love it.
Jeff, do you have something to say?
Do I? No. Oh, I'm good.
Oh, God.
I think he was not listening good.
Yeah, not feeling too positive.
You lost me like about 5 minutes ago.
You know, with all his traveling, he's turning into the, you know, the big chief around here.
What? No.
Yeah.
That's not true.
Yeah,
I was like trying to follow and then I got lost.
Well, I say no.
A confused mind says no.
All right, Alicia, I'll call you this afternoon.
Okay. Thank you, Jamie.
All right. Sure thing.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. One moment. Someone just hit the queue. I'll be right back.
All right. Sounds like she had a lot of valuables and stuff going on with that deal. Just like,
yeah, but they're all studios.
Yeah. So, so Jeannie, what are you doing? Is it next week? Are you in Plymouth?
Next week, I'm in Plymouth for Perfect Your Pitch, which is pretty spectacular. And we're going to do a lot of done-for-you things that we don't do as a rule. Dave has our web guys really designing websites, doing presentation templates. It's going to be amazing. We're going to have family offices in to visit with us, and it's going to be amazing. For 2 days, we're going to be doing Perfect Your Private Money Presentation Workshop. And then
what's the name of that place that you like to go to get clams, fried clams?
The same place you like, the Lobster Hut.
Oh, yeah, the Lobster Hut. Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's
so
awesome.
So if you're going, right, that's where Jeannie likes to go. So take her there for lunch, for dinner.
Well, the
make your reservation early with her.
At, the driveway is directly across the street from that. So right in that same area is the Lobster Hut, the East Bay Grill, the Wood Seafood. All of those are great. There's every single restaurant you can think of on that strip there. So, you know, if you can
is
go
the Ming
to,
Dynasty still there?
It is, but it's now called the Sun Dynasty.
Wow.
They sold it right after I left to another Chinese family.
Oh,
and then the following 2 days, I'll be with Dave for the Elevate, which is going to be pretty awesome. It's all about self-development. It's going to have 3 high-net-worth meetings. It'll have biweekly conference calls, the Harvard Forum. It has roundtables. It's going to have group Facebook page. Going to be pretty good, developing personal habits and implementing the business plan strategy that Harvard uses. It's going to be fantastic. So I'm anxious to go, and I think it'll be great. Plus, it's only 15 minutes from my house. Well, probably not even 15 minutes. I'd say 10 minutes from my house. Operator, we're ready. We're just digressing.
Okay, up next we have Pramod, please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Pramod and I'm calling in from Chicago. How are you all doing?
We're doing great. How are you?
Good.
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you so much for asking. So, Jimmy, I have I have been working with a broker, and I'm in the process of, you know, underwriting on a multi-unit, 41-unit apartment building in the south side of the Chicago. I did my due diligence, and I worked with Jermaine also to look at the numbers. And looks like if we can, if I can basically negotiate a little bit, I think I'll probably be landing into a very good deal. So as per the rent roll and the T12 and other, you know, documents I got from the seller, I mean, looks like, I mean, this is a 41-unit apartment building, and the asking price is 1.6. But I think I'll be able to negotiate up to 1.3 because the seller has the mortgage up to 1.2 on that property still. So he'll not be selling it anything below that. But I think with 1.25, 1.3, I was running my numbers, and all the Holy Trinity was working well. And if we are just, you know, moving forward with this, there are huge upside to this building, because as per the market rent roll, market rent, it's still, you know, below, and we have an instant an opportunity to increase the rent. Also, there are four retail space that basically is vacant right now. I mean, those four are all vacant because the guy who is managing it, I mean, he's pretty old, and he's not managing it very well, and he's trying to manage the whole property by himself. He has not appointed any property manager. So so that is also, you know, kind of an opportunity for us. So I'm thinking that this is, I mean, this looks to me as a very good deal right now. And just to close on this deal, I have to raise around, you know, 350 grand to purchase this. So I'm two things. One is I'm looking to raise some money, and if there are some investors who basically are interested, I can probably share more details, and if they can just invest with me, I mean, that'll be really, really great. And the other thing is that, I mean, if those four or five retail units are vacant, do you see, I mean, it's a and they're vacant for years, so I don't know whether it will be a great opportunity, because I do not know why they're vacant. He was saying that he never wanted to rent them because he was generating enough money. And as per the rent rolls, I mean, he has calculated only 37 units, not 41 units. So, what is your advice on that?
Well, it sounds like it could be a good deal. And as far as the retail spots, I mean, if they're on triple net lease, I mean, if you even cash flow, you know, $500 a month, that's great because they pay all their expenses. So why wouldn't he want to do that?
Yeah.
That's a question.
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, where you only have to raise $350,000, why don't you do it as a partnership with somebody? Go to the local, REIA. There's many in Chicago. And you do a little elevator pitch and get up on stage and tell them you got something going on. You're wondering if anybody wants to listen to you in the back of the room when the meeting's over. You'd love to share with them and talk to them and see.
Sure.
And do a partnership.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if we are doing a partnership, will that be, I mean, so in that case, I do not need to form a
syndication. A syndication attorney, no.
Okay.
No,
okay.
They put up the money, you do the work, and it's a nice little marriage. You split the profits.
Yep. I got it. And is there any other way of, you know, getting a funding in case I'm not able to find a partner?
Yeah, you got to start talking to people and offering them an opportunity to get involved. You can't just, you know, have this information and close shop and expect the money to come into your bank account. You got to talk to people. You got to let them know what you're doing. And you got to bring accredited investor forms with you. And you got to say, hey, would you like to see the kinds of deals I'm working on? If they say yes, say, I want to be SEC compliant. Would you mind filling out this form? Then you're building yourself a database. Were you just at the UP9?
No, I was not.
You were not.
I still missed it.
Well, any place you go that you're talking to people, whether it's Home Depot, whether you're in the grocery store, talk to people. You can't close your mouth and expect the money to come in. You got to tell people what you're doing. You got to create interest in what you're doing. The only other way is you can go to the family offices and, meet accredited investors there. They have 250 to 300 at every meeting, and that's a good thing.
Which one? Can you please repeat it? Family what?
Wilson Conferences is the name of it.
W-I-L-S-O-N.
Wilson Conferences. There's one coming up, I think, in Florida in October. I'm pretty sure it's October. But then you meet accredited investors who have megabucks, really.
Well, if anyone's interested in investing on the south side of Chicago,
you can say your name again.
Yeah.
Spell it for them so they get it.
Sure.
And your phone number.
Yeah.
But one thing you're going to ask, right, is like, because I know the south side does get bad press, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you can say something how well you know the neighborhood where the property is and things like that, that'd be really good to add it. Or they can just, like, email you and get that information. Yeah, why don't you just give
email
and, like,
I can provide all that detail. Thanks, Jeff. I've done that research, and I think the area where, I mean, there are certain pockets which are not so good, but, I mean, this is the area where the crime rate is not, it's not very significant or prominent, is what I have just, researched. And also there are a lot of expansion plans, like big banks are, investing in that area. So I can provide all this detail. My name is Pramod Singh, Pramod, and last name Singh, Singh. And my number is 847-505-9245. Once again, the number is 847-505-9245. Please text or call me, and I'll provide more details about this property. Thank you so much.
That's good, Pramod. And hopefully somebody will reach out to you. But I would check out the Wilson Conferences, and you got to tell people what you're doing. Don't keep it to yourself.
Yep.
It's under contract, right?
I'm just putting that under contract right now. I'm working with the broker, so I've sent the LOI.
Definitely, because you don't want somebody taking it away from you.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, up next we have Pamela. Pamela, please state your question.
Hi, Jeannie and Jeff. How are ya?
Good. Jeff had to step out, so now it's Jeannie and Jermaine.
Hello. How are ya?
We're good.
Good, good. Well, I am looking at a property now and was kind of perplexed when I offered a lowball offer to the agent, and he was not at all surprised but willing to work with me. So he said, well, I offered them 63%. That's the offer price of what they were asking. And he was like, well, we need to go basically $100,000. A million more than what you offered. So, but he was still talking to me. I'm trying to figure out, okay, what's going on, So then he wanted to know, well, how are you getting your numbers? How are you getting that? So I just kind of told him that the insurance was kind of high, the management was kind of high, the contract services were kind of high, so I wasn't sure, and I was very interested in making sure that my investors were safe, so these are the numbers I had to use. So he wanted to know if I could send him the information that I used to get my numbers, and I told him I'd check with my investors and call back, my partners and call back. But I was just wondering about
him, I would send him your underwriting. Send it to him and say, you know, in order, and you know, Pam, if you're unsure of yourself, he's not thinking you can close the deal. So you got to be confident. Whether you're scared to death, you got to act like you're confident. So,
well,
you say,
I expect
certain amount of return. And in order for me to do this and give my sponsor a return, I got to meet these numbers. And, I don't want to insult anybody. I hope that that you accept this with grace and let me know what the owner says. That's all. But I would show the underwriting and say, this is the kind of underwriting we do on a property. We take the seller's number and then we base everything on actuals that you sent in the trailing 12s and the rent rolls.
Okay. So, all right, and I told him we use a certain rule of thumb, and this is how I got it. We are conservative, so you're saying just go on and show him what I have and go
show
from there?
Him. Yeah,
now,
show
you
him.
Know,
all he can say is no.
Okay, great. That's my question. Thanks for your answer. Have a good one.
Never be afraid of no. You're going to take 10 no's before you take one yes.
Pam. It's Jermaine.
Yes.
Did I look at this deal?
No, this is something new.
I didn't look at it either.
You send it to one of us.
Yeah, we should look at it before you send it to the broker, just in case you really fudge something.
Oh, I definitely will be sending it first.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Congratulations.
Bye now. All right.
All right.
Up next, we have Ethan. Ethan, please go ahead.
Hey, hi, Jeannie. It's Ethan from
whoever
San Diego.
Whoever she is.
currently in Kansas City.
Good for you. I love Kansas City.
Now, I have a.
Hey, if you could find a broker for immersion, we would love that. Give me his name.
Really?
I gave you one.
I was like, I don't think that'll be a problem.
All right, call me then later, Ethan.
Sure.
All
right. So I have my first property that I'm in the second round right now. They're expecting best and final back. It's a 216 unit in Mission, which is a great area. It's definitely a B area. The property is probably a C minus, but it's a 71 vintage. One of the big opportunities on it is there's a 20% economic vacancy, but only a 7% physical, and it's down to about 5% physical right now. There's quite a bit of bad debt and non-payment, so we know that we're going to have to do...
The property manager's going bye-bye, right?
Yeah, I interviewed property management companies about 6-7 months ago. In fact, I spent 5 hours on the phone with two different ones going through your guys' 197 question checklist. So we have the property management company that we want that I want to come in on this property. We're a bit concerned. I mean, they gave me a whisper price at 10.5. I offered 8, and they got me into the second round, and they said that probably a little over 9 would get it done. At 9, it's about 41 a unit. But coming into it first year, I mean, basically buying in, the cash-on-cash return is only 4.69 buying in. We also have in my underwriting, so they gave me a guidance on repositioning all the interiors of the units to get about $130 rent bump. So that way we'd have to raise an additional $950,000. They said there was about another $700,000 that we were going to need to do for exterior repositioning and just general deferred maintenance. I had the wrong one open. Sorry, I'm reopening. All right, is this the right? Yes, this is the right one. So going in, if at 8 where I'm at now, it's only about 4.66 cash on cash return. I've gone over this with Jeff Kissy. So in year, it really doesn't start cash flowing well with the repositioning until year 3. So year 1, it's only going in, it's 4.7. Year 1, it's only 5.5. Year 2, it jumps up to 12. Year 3, 13. Year 4, 20. And year 5, 23%. And on our 5-year performa, it's our best returns are actually exiting year 4 with an IRR of 39.2%. It's I guess my concern going in on this is bumping up to 9. If we raise everything up front, the $700,000 roughly that we would need for some of the deferred maintenance, raising the capital up front to do all of the repositioning over a 3-year period, we're raising, you know, a little over $4 million, and with my partners, we don't think that should be too big of an issue. I just feel really uncomfortable. It's our first deal going in here. And the first year, you know, or so, or year and a half, we're really not showing, you know, a significant return to the investors, and we're really counting on what we're writing in pro forma with it, the repositioning, you know, getting us to significant figures. And I just wanted to get your guys' kind of thoughts on that.
You want to hear mine? Maybe you don't.
Yeah, definitely. No, I do.
Okay. If this is your first deal, and you're not going to give cash flow to the investors for 3 years or 2 years even, are you willing to put in all this time and money and work for zero money in return? Are you willing personally to do this?
I mean, if this was the first deal to get us into more, but again, it's not. We're not going to be able to show them strong return. That's why I haven't gone back.
I'm
to
talking
them
about your return,
Ethan.
I'm talking about personally.
If it means my year 2 and 3, you know, us seeing 12% cash on cash returns and then 20% in year 4, and us showing that on our as an asset in our portfolio. What we had actually intended to do, and I talked to Jeff on this, is put in, I mean, it's minimal, but would be add additional 1% to the management fee as an asset management fee. So we'd be, you know, garnering a minimal amount of cash flow for the first couple of years outside of our acquisition fee of 3%, which, you know, comes out to, you know, $270,000.
If this was your third deal, I'd say jump all over it.
Yeah.
But your first deal, I think people are going to get discouraged. Not just your investors, but your team are going to be discouraged going through all of this hiccup to have nothing for a couple of years. If it was 6 months with no cash flow, that's doable. That's an easy raise. But 2 years with no cash flow, I don't know.
Yeah, because we have to stabilize it and reposition at the same time. So,
well, you heard my answer.
Yeah.
Go
no,
ahead.
Jermaine,
you can share your thoughts, but me, I wouldn't waste my time on it. I mean, if you were getting this for a song and a dance, maybe, but. The fact that you're not getting, I mean, 4% cash and cash return, you've got to reduce that down by a couple of million to get 12%.
Yeah, and that's actually going in zero interest for the first 3 years at 4.25.
Wow. And then your exit, you're not getting that much equity taken off the mortgage. I don't know, Ethan. I think it's a lot of work, personally.
No,
a 6-month plan, I think that's awesome. But 2 years in, I mean, you've got to have some real savvy investors that ride the stock market and they don't care because they're just going to let it ride no matter what. That's the kind of investors you need. And if you have them, why not? But if you don't have them, you're going to have to be backpedaling the whole time on this deal, explaining why there's no cash flow, even though it's in your property package, even though you've brought it to their attention. They're still going to, well, when is this going to cash flow? When is this going to cash flow? They're going to be eating you alive. Ask me how
I
know.
No, I mean, I know how you know. I actually talked to my partners about this morning, you know, when I was not feeling comfortable taking our raise from 8 to 9, just for the simple fact of exactly that, you know, the first few years that this just doesn't seem like the perfect property for us to get into, to get a foothold. I mean, we're trying to get a foothold in, but, you know, I also want to make sure that we get the returns that we want for everyone that we bring in.
Yeah, I don't think I would do it.
No, it's just reaffirming kind of my position, so I appreciate that.
Okay. I noticed Jermaine said nothing.
I'm not saying anything because I'm like you, Jeannie. I mean, it is going to be a lot of work for probably minimal return for you guys. And, you know, I mean, if you're comfortable with that, your team is comfortable with that, then God bless you. And if the investors, like Jeannie said, if they're going to be comfortable with not getting a return or a minimal return for 2 years, then, you know, you didn't. But if I'm you, then I keep them in the loop on everything. So if you are able to find investors who are not going to get a return for a couple of years, I mean, I would be keeping them, you know, every couple of months, letting them know what's going on, so you're not getting the phone calls of when is this thing supposed to cash flow? When am I going to get a return on my money? I mean, those are the things that you're going to have
to. How can I get my money back?
Yeah, those are the things you're going to have to, you know, keep them constantly in the loop. So you're going to have to, you know, I would put it in my phone every couple of months to call them and do something to keep them in the loop.
On a repositioning, you're going to be on the phone with them, have conference calls every other week, letting them know what the status is going on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's labor intensive, and I've been the investor relations girl for Dave for years and years and years. Trust me. Even in a small scale, going 3 months without a cash flow check, they freak out.
No, that's valid. Like I said, we weren't in love with it. You know, it was just probably the closest I've come since that property I had that I looked at in February in Clearview Village in DeSoto. And if I saw that property now, I would jump all over it because the cash on cash was 18% on the ones that weren't down. So, you know, live and learn, live and learn.
So, Ethan, fall in love with the numbers and not with the idea of owning a property. Fall in love with those numbers because those numbers are going to get you the cash flow that you need to jump into another deal.
Yeah. No, I agree.
All right.
I was just looking for reaffirming of what I kind of already felt.
Well, you got it.
Before I gave them a best and final.
They want
to bleep up.
They may want to bleep out my comments on this coaching call.
No. It was just reaffirming because I haven't been able to get a hold of my mentor for the last week. I'm sure he's probably traveling. I know he had 6 LOIs he put in last week, so he's probably pretty buried. So, with Jeff Kissy?
Oh, yeah, he's busy. He's doing a couple of projects, yeah.
So I was just looking for someone else to reaffirm what I was my gut feeling. Yeah, so that I could sleep easier tonight by not moving forward.
Yeah, I don't think you can afford to go 2 years without a penny on this property. Even a 1% management fee, 1% of nothing is nothing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not enough. It would cash flow like 5% the first year or so, but that's still not really going to give.
And who are your partners?
They're actually a group that I met here at UP9 that have a lot of experience in single family, but they have a lot of other investors that they bring
and
into their fund.
And how many are there?
Well, there's 2 partners, but then they'll bring in. They have a lot of other access to capital. They have quite a bit.
Yeah, but 2 people
that they raise.
Plus yourself sharing.
It's not going to, right.
Think about it. All right, Ethan. Enough
okay,
said.
Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Yep. Ethan, don't forget to email me or call me about that broker in Kansas City.
Sure, I've got a few that I can recommend for you.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
Yep, you got it. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Up next, we have Tricia. Tricia, please state your question.
Hi, Jeannie. Thank you for sharing your information. You're always so patient, and we appreciate it. But my question is, oh, you're welcome, related to if you're syndicating a deal, I want to better understand how many LLCs will you be creating and what are their roles?
Okay. So the LLC you'll be creating right when you finish your due diligence is the LLC with the name of the property. So if you're going to keep the same name, say it's Aspen Place, so it's going to be Aspen Place LLC, and that's where your investors are going to invest in that property. And there's going to be an EIN number of the property. You're going to create wiring instructions. You're going to have all the articles of organization, et cetera. If it was me, what I would do is create a business LLC for you, your husband, and whoever you're partnering with, because what you want to do is you can create that after the property, but say you have a business LLC. Let's just, for instance, say it's Bostonian Investment Group, which is Dates, right? So when
okay.
you get your cash flow checks, you and your husband will get one check, your partner will get the other check, and then you're going to pay the business end of things a check. Each time you get a, if it's monthly or quarterly. And so what will happen is, say there's 100% and it's 30% of the deal, and say you get $1,000. Let's just average it out. So you
right.
and your husband will get $400, your partner will get $400, and the property business entity that you set up is going to get $200. And that's so that you're building money up so that the next deal you don't have to come out of pocket for the earnest money deposits, for the SEC attorney. That money is coming from the company that you set up with the entities, you and your business
okay.
partner. So
okay.
it's only, you only have to set one up because you can buy a property in your own name and or assign it to the LLC of the property. You only have to do that. But the smart thing to do is to do a business arrangement. If you have a partner that is not your spouse, set it up as a business and have an LLC attached to that.
Okay, and you don't have to create another one for a syndication?
No.
No, you use that one. Okay,
yeah.
Perfect, thank you.
So when you, so after you create that business one, when you start to buy properties, you're going to say whatever your business is, say it's Coffee LLC, agrees to purchase said property and or assign. And then you're going
right.
to have an LLC of the property when you go through your due diligence.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
At the moment, we have no callers with questions.
Well, you've been busy today, have you not? I'm going to just ask this one more question, and then we're going to call it a day. This is for Nune Karapetian. I hope I didn't abort that because I can't. It's K-A-R-A-P-E-T-I-A-N. Anyways, here are some questions legal setup. Do we need to create an LLC? Yes, you should create an LLC as a protection when you're buying a property. Each property would have its own LLC, and you can consider it a series LLC if you want to keep going with the same LLC. Do you have name of attorneys, including SEC attorney that you work with that you trust? I do. I have three or four of them, but Kim Taylor is the first person I recommend. Her number is 858-335-3825. Insurance, I went through this on the call. Michael Shadid, Franklin Insurance Company. Let me get his number out. I should know it by heart. I say it so many times. 404-832-1254. And can you provide resources to find the regional economic growth rates that includes job growth? Economic Development Committee, Chamber of Commerce, in the area you're going to invest in. That's the best advice I can give you. Hope that helps. Anybody else in the queue, operator?
No, we currently have no one in the queue.
That's it for this week. Next week is back to Dave. Hope we see everybody soon, and thank you for all the questions. And if you need anything, you can call Jermaine, you can call me. We're here, and we're happy to help you with anything that you need. Bye-bye now.